Good morning. Today is Friday, February the 7th. Joining us this morning, newly minted city manager for the city of Eureka, Dean Lauder. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, better than you're going to be. Give it up to me. All right, baby. Here we go.
All right.
Before we get there, though, why do we say that? Mentor. Why is a mental or moral guide called a mentor?
You got me.
I can even drop. Have you ever read the Iliad or the Odyssey?
I actually haven't.
How'd you get through high school?
You know, they don't really focus on the classics anymore in high school. At least
all
not
right.
Where I went to high school.
Oh, I see. Pulling the age card already, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you are going to be dead meat. All right, here we go. Mentor. Mentor was the name of a faithful friend of Ulysses, whose form Minerva assumed when she accompanied Telemachus, or Telemachus, depending on which way of the ledger you like to pronounce that. That was a raging debate for me as a junior in high school.
I see.
When she assumed in his search for his father. And so the term became to be known as a wise counselor and guide.
Excellent.
Mentor. See, now you know a little.
Does this mean that you're a bit of a mentor to me then?
Yeah, right. We're going to have to spend a whole lot more time together before that bridge gets crossed, buddy.
Well, I'm now informed.
There you go.
I'm better for it.
There you go. Mm-hmm. All right, so you guys have kind of settled in a little bit. You're running around. Everything's still spanky new and fresh.
Yep.
General impressions that have changed since you've kind of been here a little bit. You know, it's probably like anything else. You know, you walk through a house, you're going to buy it. You go, wow. You come back and go, well, we got to take care of that. We got to look over there. We got that, you know, the grout's kind of popping out over there.
You start to see things a little more clearly, maybe. Or
perhaps.
You know, you get blinded by excitement.
Or the novelty is gone.
Yeah, the novelty. Yeah. Sure. You know, my observations, and my wife and I talk about this quite a bit, too, as we drive around, really actually haven't changed a whole lot from what I offered when we first came. So I don't know that the sheen, if you will, or the novelty has worn off, because I think that we've both been around the block long enough where we can, you know, we see things for maybe what they are, maybe a little quicker than you would say if you were, you know, 25 and done with grad school and tackling the world and full of idealism and things like that. You know, I think we see the community for what it is, and that is it's got some really amazing strengths to it. And it also has some real challenges out there as well. And those are kind of some of the things we've talked about in the past. One of the things that it feels like or seems like that maybe we're not always talking as much about is what actually is being done about some of those challenges, like the homelessness and the opioid crisis and things of that nature. And I do think that maybe the community as a whole really has some great organizations that are all working on trying to make Eureka better. And sometimes I think that if we all worked on a little bit more concerted effort, we might even have a more tangible or palpable impact.
One of the things, not to put you under the high-powered microscope, this is just kind of like the little starter kit microscope, but something that's always struck me is how many executive directors we have around here. I don't know if that's typical of any small town or of California towns or of pick a town, but you mentioned some of these various outreach organizations, assistance organizations, every single one has an ED.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, okay. So my presumption or interpretation of that means that then there's a fiefdom that develops.
Mm-hmm.
And whether we're working together or not, this is my area of responsibility, which is why they're hired.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as far as holding hands and skipping down the lane together, maybe not. Maybe I push you over onto the rocks and and I skip down the trail.
Sure.
I mean, there could be that temptation, certainly. Not that that's happening. When you see all these various nonprofit groups that are out there, all these various entities, charitable and non-charitable, do you think that they're working in concert? Do you have that sense that everybody's kind of pulling the same way?
You know, I'm not exactly certain, and I think that just failure to realize that our fates are interwoven, you know, if that isn't happening, then that's problematic. You kind of started out the question, I think, by asking what my experiences with, say, a community and the amount of executive directors that might be in existence. And I'm not sure if that's necessarily an indicator of something good or bad. To me, it seems to indicate that there's a lot of desire to organize and try to focus resources on a given issue or problem. But I don't know yet as to how much intersection is taking place between all of those efforts. And naturally, there can be, at times, I think, when different organizations exist, there's always going to be finite resources. You know, there just is. That's inherent in society. So if left unchecked, that could result in what you described as
feedback. Well, you know, as long as I get my unfair share, I'm happy.
Yeah.
that mentality is kind of what starts to chew away at the fabric. Yeah, different neighborhoods in the city certainly have different issues. Also, mm-hmm. I'm thinking of roads primarily, but you know there are other issues also. Is there any attempt, have any of the department heads shared anything about trying to identify specific neighborhood issues and then cross-reference that into the various departments? So, you know, if it's public works, okay, these are the five neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
rather than saying overall we need X number of miles of road paved, as an example.
Well, I think that I'll probably get the name wrong, but there's an elementary school that hasn't been used for quite some time.
Jefferson?
Yeah, that's maybe being looked at as an opportunity for development of some kind. And I think that that's been pointed out to me as an opportunity to really make an impact.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Dean Lauder from the city of Eureka. So what do you think about the view from the office?
My view from the office? You know, I have to admit, a few Fridays ago where we lost power because of a winter storm that happened, it was interesting because as I'm in my office, I'm able to look out and see snow in the mountains, but didn't have to drive through any to work. This is probably seems like a weird detail to point out to most people who have lived here for a long time, if not their whole lives. But for somebody who's from the Midwest, I didn't really
disconnect on that one.
Well, I didn't mind not having power. I was more excited with the fact that I didn't have to worry about having snow tires on my car.
Yeah, multiple collisions and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
you mean even in the Midwest, they have crashes in the snow?
Big time.
Oh, I thought that was just us when we try to drive over 299 in the winter.
No, where it gets really, really challenging is when you have somebody who's from out of town, may have rented a car, and then they're driving, you know, down a curvy part of, say, I-35 in conditions that won't allow you to drive at highway speeds. And they usually end up ping-ponging a bunch of cars.
So it's a California syndrome.
Or Texas.
Right, you could say it. Texas.
My sister lived in Texas for a bit of time, and every once in a great while they get a little ice on the roads, and there the answer to dealing with the ice was to speed up so you got over it faster.
Faster, right. Yeah, less exposure time.
Right.
Well, kind of like the hail that happened on Sunday.
Yeah.
Just go fast and you get home sooner.
Right.
Yeah, I would suspect that would be a little bit different. What kind of grade would you give the city's infrastructure? I mean, you probably had a little bit of time to see. You know, we've got the water treatment plant that's going to be, I guess that's going to be something you get to play with.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out how to expand that thing and fix it up and renovate it, restore it, whatever. The roads we hear about, sidewalks we hear about. In general terms, what kind of grade or number point on a 10-point scale would you give the
on a 10-point? I was thinking letter grade, so now I have to convert. So 10 being outstanding, 1 being abysmal, could we say?
Yeah. 5 being kind of, yeah.
I would say probably a 3 or a 4.
Now, is there, with the way that California treats its gas tax, mm-hmm. with the emphasis that's going now with electric cars, mm-hmm. Other things, using the roads that aren't paying for the roads, mm-hmm. the higher miles per gallon that the new vehicles have, is it sustainable? You know, when you're looking at the roads, is this something that is possible to maintain, or are we looking at something a little bit different, maybe shrinking the footprint and having a bunch of one-way streets? Just because there's not that much coming through, guys, and we can't handle 100%, so maybe we can handle 2/3.
Yeah.
And we convert everything over, and we've got single lanes, and bring them in, and thank you very much.
Well, I think that, you know, the thing with a lot of, like, government operations, when you're talking about infrastructure, streets, you're talking about stormwater, anything like that, generally speaking, you have to build a certain capacity. And once that capacity is constructed, there is a carrying cost associated with it. So if anything changes with regards to the overall formula of how to fund or pay for depreciation of that asset, you have to adjust accordingly. Otherwise, you'll have, for example, what you're pointing out, say with a much more fuel efficient car, you're at the pump less, you're buying less fuel, and as a result, there's less tax dollars that are being put into the infrastructure. If we don't account for that, we can't afford the infrastructure that's already existing and in place. And a great example of this is actually in the 80s, Wisconsin and Minnesota, the two states I grew up in or lived in most of my life, adopted a gas tax at about the same time. Wisconsin actually adopted their gas tax with an annual inflator in it, and Minnesota did not. So over 20-plus years, what ended up happening, or 25 years, what ended up happening is that Wisconsin's revenue stream continued to grow with the natural increase in cost of infrastructure. And as a result, you can be driving in a relatively remote part of the state and be on an absolutely exquisite county or state highway. Minnesota has relatively decent infrastructure, comparatively speaking, but they really got behind the eight ball because there never was any political wherewithal to adjust that gas tax. And whenever there's discussion about the gas tax, the state legislators, typically the governors, actually I got to hand it to Governor Walz, who's current governor of Minnesota. He actually ran on the gas tax, which was considered political suicide by most, and he still got elected. And so he showed some leadership there, and the public did respond to it. So hopefully
10,000 lakes is not supposed to be in the middle of your road.
Right. Yeah. You know, surprisingly, allegedly there's actually more than 10,000 lakes in the state. And so it starts to beg the question, does a engineered storm drainage pond actually count as a lake?
Right.
You know,
yeah. But do ducks land in it? Yes or no?
Yeah.
There we go.
there's a cattail. But yeah, so the point is that, you know, now one state finds itself in a position where they're behind the eight ball because infrastructure doesn't get cheaper. The demand on it doesn't get cheaper as the population grows. All different kinds of demands are put on that, and that's not necessarily just vehicular traffic, like you pointed out. How people get around is changing, and how people desire to get around is changing. And, you know, we have to be able to kind of figure all of that out while basically funding an existing asset that, you know, has a fixed cost to it.
Yeah, and so Wisconsin, with the inflation, that was an increased percentage?
Yeah.
Or, how do you inflate something that the dollars may be going down, or at least dolphining?
Yeah, I think it adjusted according to inflation, and I think that there were other indicators. So, yeah, if in the wake of 2008, things changed dramatically,
right.
And, you know, you could afford probably more infrastructure for less at that time. But
yeah. It's 8:30.
Locally owned businesses help our community maintain a distinct personality and to help increase tourism because we don't look like every other place. Small businesses also provide the ability to try on and try out items before you buy and get real expertise, saving you both time and money. When you shop, shop local.
Our award-winning camping department has the gear you need no matter what kind of camping you do. Come in and experience the many benefits of shopping with Pacific Outfitters.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time is 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with City of Eureka City Manager, which kind of is redundant with the city, but we're still here, Dean Lauder. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Dean, one of the things that I would suggest is going to be a challenge, if not already. We've talked about a little bit about the infrastructure and the funding of that, and you know, with base levels of responsibility. But changing demographics, you know, we are in Eureka certainly seeing a significant aging. Mm-hmm. Okay, and there used to be 8 or 10 elementary schools. Now there's about 2/3 of that. Used to be 3 junior highs, now there's 1. The high school, I think, when I went through initially, was about 2,000 kids. Mm-hmm. Now it's about 1,200, mm-hmm. and it's 4 classes instead of 3. I mean, things are changing. You know, if there's no employment, no youngsters, no kids, right? Okay. So as we age, that's also got to be throwing a little bit of a complicator in there, or at least something that needs to be allowed for. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? I mean, do you just kind of project out aging trends and then start to change your community services appropriately? Or do you say, you know, we probably are going to have some viable industry locate here in the next 15 years, so we don't want to blow everything up. We want to keep something back and then make that all pencil out.
Well, if I follow you, I think, you know, that most communities actually have this kind of ebb and flow to it, and it's you know, easy to state, it's difficult to actually go through. You know, so for example, there was a city that in the Twin Cities area called Richfield. Richfield was a burgeoning first ring suburb in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and then all of the kids you know, grew up, they went to college, they moved away. And you had all of the infrastructure in place for, say, households that averaged 3.5 to 4 people per household, and now there was 2 or 1 as some of those folks aged in place. And, you know, there's no panacea to this, but there are a couple of different things a community can try to do, and that is if what we want to do, you have to be looking forward. You can't just be playing to where you are in a given moment. You have to be thinking ahead.
That's a hockey thing with Gretzky, right?
Well, he skates to where the puck is going to be, or at least did when he played. So that's kind of what
now
we
it's
have.
Where the donut's going to be. Sorry. Well,
no, that's all right. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of different things that can come into play. You know, one of the things that you want to focus on, say, in a city like Richfield, or what they experienced, was housing stabilization. A lot of times, if you have an aging population, it's not because, you know, their house might not be looking as great as it did 20 years ago. And that might be because you have a widower living there who's on a fixed income, and it isn't because he or she doesn't necessarily want their property to look nicer. They don't know, they don't have the resources or the options available to them. And cities can get involved with doing low interest, you know, loans and programs like that. At least where I'm from, you could leverage existing nonprofits that would offer these services. People could reside, re-roof, re-window, and have it at, say, a forgiven interest rate or something like that.
So kind of like the old facade grant or economic redevelopment.
Perfect example of that.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. And then ultimately you do need to provide options for folks so that, you know, aging in a single family home is just simply not easy, especially once you get to a certain point. Mobility issues, health issues, things of that nature. If you can provide them an option where they can still stay in the community that they've fallen in love with and don't want to leave, and then free up that single-family home for that potential younger family that might come in and have kids, that's how you kind of start having that long-term impact as far as changing the dynamic or the future of a city.
Now, do you need to have surplus dollars available to be able to jumpstart that? Because, you know, it sounds good if you take a 5 or a 10 or a 20-year horizon.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking a 5-week horizon. Might be a little stickier just to get that first rotation of the wheel rolling.
For sure. You know, it's I think the first question you asked me when I first talked to you, why do we say it, was a reference to the rabbit or the hare and the turtle, and it was the long run. And that's really what we're talking about here is we're not talking about a five-week solution or implementation. We are talking about a long run. We're talking about 5, 10, 15, 20 years, you know, and what that comes down to is getting people to stay committed to the vision, talking about it, issuing benchmarks, measuring ourselves against those benchmarks, being honest if we hit those benchmarks or if we don't hit those benchmarks and why.
Well, yeah, I would think keeping it on the front burner.
Mm-hmm.
At least, you know, there's give and take in the monitoring of what's going on.
For sure.
Rather than just, well, this is what this city council wants. Oh, and this is what this one wants, and they may not be in common.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's that whole stabilization thing. Lots of luck. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Are you a business owner looking for financial or technical assistance? An entrepreneur looking to start a new business? The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and the Small Business Development Center want to help. With business loans, classes, and one-on-one consulting, our goal is your success. We've been helping Humboldt County businesses for over 30 years. Visit us at 520 E Street, Eureka, the Prosperity Center, or find us on the web. The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Small Business Development Center. We're here for you.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Dean Lauder. Dean, the concept of developments, of housing, this infrastructure, you know, when you have a more mature community, and
yep.
And I think Eureka's, I don't know what the percentage is that's built out. I mean, it's probably to the point where we could identify the lots that haven't had structures on them for 10 years
mm-hmm.
and maybe count them on both hands.
Sure.
When do you get to the point where you say, let's blade it, let's change it, let's renovate it, or let's just kind of leave it as green space? As I think you've got aggressive, contentious supporters of all four.
Mm.
Yeah, pocket parks. Yes, we need pocket parks. Huh? Okay, well, in that alley, we don't want to build in a commercial building. We want to keep it green. How come? Because green space. Okay. Versus some of the other, I mean, you can argue any of the points. I think any of us could. How do you make that determination when to pull the trigger and what this looks like? Is that kind of the role of the general plan?
Yeah, you know, I think if I track you, I mean, ultimately what it comes down to is having a clarity of priorities and then trying to, you got to spend time cultivating the relationships with, say, those four different groups, if you will, to hopefully get some buy-in into the clarity on those priorities. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, I would hope that any particular organized group or citizen would be able to coalesce around, say, making the city better, making the community better. Okay, what does that mean? How are we defining that? What are those priorities that we have to rally around in order to do that? And really, only until you can successfully have that conversation and get that clarity, you know, that's the only way you're really going to be able to make a difference. I mean, for me, a lot of folks have come up to me and said, well, what are you going to do to make this place better, and what is your plan to
mow
make
my
this
lawn?
Well, you know, I actually had that done just last week, and for 49 years and 2 weeks, I've never in my life one heard the drone of a lawnmower in the month of January, or smelled the
cut grass?
Ancillary benefit of fresh cut grass. That is
really
a first for me.
Well, last week must have been a stunner for you then.
It was. It was. It's the little things.
Welcome home, baby.
Yeah. But, you know, it's ultimately not all on my shoulders. I've got ideas, and I'm going to advance those ideas, and then I need people to hopefully rally around those ideas. And
or advise you no.
Or advise no.
Yeah.
But then we pick up the flag, and we move in a different direction. But
when – and I, this may be a third rail, so you may not want to jump on this one. With a community or neighborhood, ward, you know, whatever, that is higher percentage of land owner occupied mm-hmm. versus absentee owner or mm-hmm. renter. Mm-hmm. Does everybody's opinion count the same?
This feels like a trap.
No, I've often thought, okay, when we had the drug houses and stuff, a lot of the folks were out of the area. These were investment properties. They weren't here on a regular basis. They really didn't know. And if the place is empty or the place is full, it doesn't impact their life.
Right.
Okay. If you're the guy living across the street,
yeah,
it impacts your life every single hour that you're at home and probably a third of the time when you're at work.
Yeah.
Same thing with commercial properties.
Yeah.
You know, you don't care because you don't see it, whether it's occupied or not. Okay, it could be some cash flow, but that's it. I contend that land ownership, those opinions have a higher value because they're vested into that community to mm-hmm. some way or another. I know it's not popular, so I'm not asking you to, but how do you make that recognition?
Mm-hmm.
That okay, if somebody's in Eureka today, but they're gonna be renting in Fortuna in 6 months,
mm-hmm.
okay, is their opinion just as valid as the guy who or gal who just purchased a home and they're gonna be here for 25 years?
Sure. Yeah, it's. I mean, this is a question that gets asked in literally every community I've worked for, and you know, I think the conventional wisdom is those who have pushed their chips to the center of the table and made that investment. It seems like there should be more weight given, if you will. I think
somehow, some way.
Yeah. Somehow, some way.
Yeah.
But I don't know that legally that can happen, right? I mean, once upon a time in this country's history, if you didn't own land, you didn't get to vote.
You are Jeffersonian.
So.
All right. Thank you very much. I found a friend. See you tomorrow.